Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. My guest this week is psychotherapist and author of The Science of Sleep, Heather Darwall-Smith. She is so knowledgeable on the subject of, well, I mean, many subjects. She's got so many letters after her name. But for this episode, we're talking about sleep and insomnia and the relationship between stress and anxiety and insomnia, how we can become less stressed about sleep, because often when we try to better our sleep, we get stressed about it. That just keeps us on the cycle of not sleeping because we're anxious and then anxious because we're not sleeping. It is such a minefield. Heather totally diffused that anxiety for me in this conversation. She has so many helpful tips that don't add to your list of to-dos, but really just help you decompress, and how important that is. Thank you as always for listening, for your feedback, for your reviews, for your shares. And do follow me on Instagram. I have a new page called @owningitpodcast where I'm sharing lots more resources relating to the podcast. So tips, clips, explainers. So do join me over there. And thank you as always. Heather Darwall-Smith, thank you so much for being a guest on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. It's so great to have you. I'm a little bit intimidated by the amount of qualifications that you have.
Oh, gosh. Good morning. Thank you for having me. Oh, dear. Don't be intimidated at all.
It's very impressive. You have so many letters after your name. You've done so much with psychotherapy and sleep and on the kind of crossover and CBTI, which I'll ask you about as well. I guess to start, can you just let my listeners know who you are and what you do, how you help people and how it relates to anxiety?
Okay, so I'm Heather and I'm a psychotherapist and I specialize in sleep and stress. I wasn't always a psychotherapist. It's my second career. I retrained. I was an art director working in advertising and design, but I was fortunate enough to be able to retrain. And my passion is very much sleep, because for me, it's the ultimate in letting go. And if we can't sleep, it has such a detrimental effect on our health. And finding ways to improve sleep and improve rest and reduce stress is so fundamental to our well-being. So I continue to learn, and there's always new research, because sleep science is a very young science. Mm-hmm. And it's such an amazing area in which to work. It's tricky, because sleep is tricky. There's so much to it, and it's like Pandora's box. You open one bit up and then something else comes out. It's very, very complex, but it's also the one thing that we all do, and biologically we are programmed to do.
And are you working one-on-one with people?
Yeah, very much so.
And they're coming into you with sleep issues or anxiety issues, or I guess it's which comes first, I suppose, sometimes.
I like to see it as, if you think about the body as a bottle of fizzy drink that's been really, really shaken up, the bubbles in that bottle are the stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol. So that builds up a head of pressure in the bottle. And if you imagine what it's like, you open that bottle, it explodes and it makes a mess. So the result can be what we term anxiety, that feeling in the body. But of course, it's also the disruption to sleep. And the two are inherently interlinked. And it's very, very difficult to know what comes first, whether it's anxiety or poor sleep. It's really difficult to unpick which one came first.
For me, in my own experience, I have always been a very good sleeper. I'm so proud of my ability to sleep. Like, I'm neither a night owl nor a morning person. I just would happily sleep. But when I started to experience anxiety, or whenever I do, like whenever there's something going on, for me, I notice that the anxiety comes first and then I'm up worrying about it. But then the lack of sleep just perpetuates it further. Then you get stuck into this cycle. Do you find what's common for most people?
Yeah, that's really, really normal. And in some ways, it's really, if we reframe it and think of our body as it's trying to help us. So the stress response gets triggered when it perceives there's something it needs to pay attention to. Stress is, so if you think about it, stress is something we really care about. Mm-hmm. And for us to do something, or there's a challenge, it needs that the body to sort of step up, if you like. So it triggers the response. So it will trigger increased cortisol and adrenaline. So if you put it as, tomorrow I'm going to climb a mountain, it's going to need that push to get you up. So it's perceiving it as, you need me to be online, you need me to push and get up. That means my body's going to do this. So, but the result is, that also means alertness, that means awake. So often we get upset maybe with our body because it's doing it, but in a very odd way, it's actually trying to help us, because it's receiving the information, something's going on, I need to be alert. So I'm awake and I'm ready for you. But it's not always helpful.
Yeah. Everything I'm learning about anxiety is that there's just so many hangovers from evolution that don't apply anymore. To me, it just seems like if we go back to survival and that being our primary goal, and how crucial we know rest and sleep is to being able to be strong and fit to be able to fend for ourselves, it just seems like such a chink in the armor that like the stress would have that impact on our sleep, when I know we need the adrenaline and cortisol to run or fight or be alert. But we also, as a result, the side effects, the more longer term side effects, that depleting our resilience and really compromises our well-being. So it's interesting to me that our body has evolved that way to disrupt the thing we need most.
It's true, isn't it? I mean, the evolutionary aspect, it's really interesting, I think, that we do still sleep, because if you think about it, we're unconscious, we're potentially vulnerable to predators. And yet we have not evolved out of needing sleep. Far from it. Our sleep need has not changed. We do need it. But I think what we've got worse potentially, I mean, I'm not saying that in cave times it wasn't stressful, because it was, I'm sure, if you're worrying about where your next meal is or threat of attack, whatever that might be, stress would still have been present. But I think today life has sped up so much, and we don't prioritize rest. We don't prioritize downtime. We've got a very much always on culture. And added to that, we've got a disruption to our natural rhythms, to our circadian rhythms, through lighting, through being on screens all the time. And then from a sleep perspective, sleep's almost become a performance sport. It's like, yeah, I must get X, I must do Y. And actually, I'm always keen to stress, the importance is, think of it like a roller coaster. If we've got something big and important to do, we've got to rise up, meet the challenge. We've got to come down and we've got to relax. That converse downtime matters so, so much. And we just don't prioritize it.
I was going to ask you that next, about their performance anxiety almost around sleep, which creates all this other anxiety. Like, I personally don't like to wear anything that tracks my sleep. I don't want to wake up in the morning and see that I had poor quality sleep and then be fretting about it and then impact the rest of my day. Like you said, the performance around it has become almost a tool to like measure yourself with. And I find that there's a lot of anxiety around trying to better your sleep. Maybe it's not all that helpful all the time for someone who is anxious and is going to overthink and is going to measure their sleep in teaspoons.
It's hugely important. I mean, that tracking, it has a name when it becomes problematic. It's called orthosomnia. And it is very much, I work in a sleep clinic, and it is very problematic when people bring in their data and they point at it and say, look, Heather, this is what's happening. Now, as yet, none of the trackers are accurate. they will get there. There's a couple that are getting close who shall remain nameless. But one thing that's really interesting from a sleep perspective and the patient population that I see is the amount of perfectionism that comes in. It's almost like perfectionism and insomnia go hand in hand.
Mm.
So that measurement piece becomes really difficult. And someone's then tracking and believing that, oh, I haven't had enough sleep, I haven't had enough this, I haven't had enough that, and measuring, placing it all on an external measurement system without knowing how they really feel in their body. And it's really, really difficult to start to unpick, because these devices have their uses, like everything's got its pros and cons. But it does become really, really problematic when your whole measurement is based on this object, which isn't even entirely accurate. The other kicker in that, which is so interesting, when someone comes in and does a sleep study, and they might say they're wired up to everything, their heart's being measured. It's a hugely complex piece when someone comes in to do a sleep study. And they'll say, I didn't sleep a wink at all. Technically, we can then show them the data. Well, actually, you did sleep. And they're just, absolutely no way, I didn't sleep. Now, I'm not going to discount someone's experience, because what happens is, technically, we can be asleep, but within sleep, we're in this lighter phase of sleep and can feel very alert and can feel awake, but are technically asleep. And there's a whole really complicated piece about sleep perception, also called paradoxical insomnia. So how we measure and think, how much we think we get, is often very, very different to what we're actually getting. And then, of course, it feeds the anxiety again, and you go round in this circle again.
I guess I understand the drive towards these devices. I'm not wearing one right now, but I like them for like the achievement of like, oh, you've got 10,000 steps a day and you didn't even notice it.
Yeah,
I stay away from it when it comes to sleep. And I also don't really want to be told like my heart rate's gone through the roof, because then I'll panic more. I understand, though, that for some people, it's giving them a sense of control over something that when they're asleep, they're not really in control of. But would your first port of call be, if someone is anxious or is struggling to sleep, just to step away from that measurement completely?
Very much so. And you've said something really important there. When people trying to feel in control, sleep, you cannot control sleep. And that is part of the problem. You just cannot control it.
You can only support it.
You can support it. You can create the right conditions. I mean, if you think about it, it's what we have to think about is, and you've allowed enough time for your sleep, the conditions, the environment is right, relaxed mind, relaxed body. Now, the second two are not easy. The first two are possibly easier. But again, there's complexity to that. But sleep does its thing. It's a biological process that's just going to do its thing. If we've got the time and the conditions and we're chilled or chilled enough, it's not about perfection, sleep will just happen. But we can't then within that then control how much deep sleep we get, how much dream sleep we get. We have to really focus on the things we can control, and then we start to pick apart lifestyle. We're looking at, well, how much caffeine are you having, how much, when do you exercise, what are you eating, have you eaten enough protein, have you eaten too much sugar. I mean, it's everything with sleep is really multifactorial, but sleep becomes the absolute focus. And of course, that's the moment we try and focus on it. It's like shining a torch on it and going, I must do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the sleep will go, absolutely not. Bye. I don't need that attention.
So everything we're doing, we need to kind of just drop the rope and surrender to the sleep. So a lot of the things that are meant to be helpful are actually kind of counterproductive then in the sleep world.
For some people, yeah. If you're someone who is very much in the perfectionism tendency,
mm-hmm.
what I often see, someone gets very rigid about their wind down routine at night, the time they go to bed, the time they get up, and then they start to cancel things in life. Oh, I can't do that because I won't be able to do my wind down.
Mm.
And it becomes really controlling. If you think of insomnia as a really hungry beast and you keep feeding it and giving it all the attention and trying to get things absolutely right, sleep will go, I'm out of here, and insomnia will go, oh, give me more, I'll just keep taking.
How do we know the difference between a couple of bad nights sleep or a light sleeper or actual insomnia? Like, can you help me define insomnia? The word alone is anxiety inducing.
Yeah, it's it's that's interesting, isn't it? Because then that gives us information as to what your experience of insomnia is. You have a sense of it's not great, and it triggers, it lights up a little center in the brain that has made that association.
I mean, it doesn't get very much good press, does it?
No, it doesn't. And different people's experience of what insomnia is very different again, because for some people, two or three bumpy nights of sleep, they won't have any anxiety. They might say, yeah, I don't sleep well, but there won't be any anxiety attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, one or two, three nights of bumpy sleep will send them into a full anxiety, and it starts to then build. Technically, it's not being able to fall asleep, stay asleep consistently for, I think, 3 to 4 nights a week for longer than 3 months.
Okay.
The thing is, it's so personal. If it makes you anxious, it's going to disrupt your sleep. And if your sleep is disrupted from anxiety, then it will continue to keep going around in circles.
And are there people coming into you then, I imagine, who are saying, look, I just don't sleep, and they fit all the criteria for insomnia, and they're like, but I'm not stressed, I'm not anxious, I don't know, like I feel chilled, I feel relaxed, like nothing's bothering me. Why would they be not able to wind down if the stress hormones weren't present?
So many people are so used to running on hyperarousal that they don't even know they're stressed anymore.
Okay.
It's such a common state of being. And that can be really difficult to pick apart, because someone will say, well, I'm not stressed, and theoretically they're not. And it may be that they're not, but it may be that the level is just high anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There could well be a biological sleep disorder sitting underneath it. It may not be in some stress related. It may be something like restless leg syndrome, or obstructive sleep apnea, or it could be a circadian rhythm disorder. Just because someone comes in with sleep issues, it doesn't mean it's going to be always going to be insomnia. And so it's picking apart what might be under there is a little bit of an detective work that's so important, so that you treat it correctly.
What's your starting point? Like, what's the first thing you'd rule out if someone is presenting with sleep challenges?
There's a series of questionnaires that people are asked to fill in what we want to address is it anxiety, is it depression, is it sleep apnea? Those are sort of the big ones. And then we then look at lifestyle. Is it a circadian rhythm disorder? So that's a cluster of biological sleep issues where it could be that your sleep wake timing is out, so you're an extreme night owl, but you're trying to go to bed at the time that doesn't suit your biological clock. It could be that you're an extreme morning person, and again, society doesn't work for people who've got these extremities.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that you are sleepwalking, or you have something called periodic limb movement disorder. So if you live on your own, you may not know you have them, because they happen when you're asleep, but it wrecks the quality of your sleep. So it tends to mean a partner will say, oh, you're snoring a lot. Well, if you're snoring a lot, that's worth getting looked at, because it could be apnea that will be wrecking your sleep, and you can treat that quite easily.
What is the apnea? Can you define that? I mean, I hear it so often, but I don't really understand it.
So it's when you're asleep, the throat starts to close down and you snort or choke, and then you wake with a start. But what it's doing is stopping the oxygen going to the brain for a very short period. Now, some people will have that 2 or 3 times an hour, but some people will have it 10, 20, 30 upwards an hour.
Oh my gosh.
They may be asleep, but their sleep quality is really poor. So they never, ever feel rested. They never feel like they've had a great night's sleep. Their partner is likely to be suffering from insomnia, because their partner won't be able to sleep. And it's often we treat both. And often people don't necessarily take it seriously enough that if that's going on, that does need to be looked at, because that has significant effects on our health.
Okay.
But if it's something like restless leg syndrome, which is something you tend to be able to feel before you go to bed, you're likely to know that that's there. A sense of sort of, people describe it as ants crawling under the skin. It's really, really uncomfortable. But if you've got periodic limb movement disorder and you sleep on your own, so your body's sort of jerking and jolting in bed, you may not know about that you've even got it. that you might know I don't sleep well. So it's not always that it's insomnia. It's not always that it's stress. Yes, lots of people don't realize that they're stressed, but there could be a biological issue sitting in there.
But then it might not have been stress related, but then they get stressed about it.
Yeah.
So it's always, I guess, always helpful to address stress and anxiety alongside whatever else you're looking at.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. The two always go hand in hand. We look to find, is there a biological issue? And then working alongside, okay, let's look at lifestyle. Let's look at what else is going on. What can we address to look at the overall picture?
You mentioned there about society not necessarily fitting in with our sleep needs or what comes natural to us. If there wasn't a rush hour at 7 a.m. or whatever, is there an ideal sleep, or does it vary from person to person? Because we all sleep at night when it's dark.
Well, hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully we do, yeah. Unless we, of course, if we're shift workers or new parents, there's people who have to fit in with daylight hours as well. But it was so interesting. I think there's so much press during the pandemic about how sleep was a problem and anxiety and things was a problem. And yes, it was true. And it remains so. But there were also a lot of really huge positives that came out, because people were starting to find their natural rhythm again.
Mm.
They weren't getting up to commute, often in darkness, which is something that does also seriously affect our sleep. So they were able to get a much more natural rhythm going. And some people sorted out their sleep problems during the last 2 years because of the changes, because of the some people it's been very, very stressful. For some people, it hasn't been. They've been able to let go of a lot of the stuff that's, or a lot of doing, like showing up at the weekend and having to take the kids here, there and everywhere. Life became simpler and the rhythms became much more natural. And people definitely started to sleep better. But we all need different sleep. I mean, when we're newborns, it's sort of 14 to 17 hours a day up to, but when we're an older adult, when we're over 65, it's 7 to 8 hours. But it may be that 5 to 6 hours is appropriate when you're older, or 9 hours is appropriate. Adults, as a rule, the recommendation is 7 to 9 hours, but you may be someone who genetically can get by on 6. You may need more, you may need 10. More than 10, a bit questionable. Teenagers, for example, teenagers is the big one. I mean, teenagers need, the recommendation is 8 to 10 hours, but their body clocks tend to go later. So for a teenager, we're trying to get them to go to bed to get enough sleep so they can get up at 7 a.m. in the morning. But of course, their body clock says, I'm not even sleepy. It's not their fault. That is how they're built.
Mm.
So they may not be sleepy till midnight, but their body still needs 10 hours. And then they're having to be got up at, 6, 7 o'clock to be at school and function. It's a very strange thing that we do to our teenagers.
Okay, so it's not their fault. I'll keep that in mind when my 1.5-year-old gets there.
It's still very frustrating with my 19-year-old, believe me. But the thing is also, what's really interesting about the teenage brain and sleep is how we have this sort of, okay, I'm a teenager, but the brain maturation process doesn't necessarily fully mature till we're in our mid-20s. So you may still have, and I do see this a lot, especially with university students and people in their first year of work, they may still have a teenage sleep need, but they're trying to fit into a societal 9 to 5 clock, but their bodies aren't built that way. So their bodies are built to be night owls, so they're built to be social, etc. at night, but they're of an age where they're trying to have an adult life, but their brain isn't working that way from a sleep perspective. And that is a really, really big issue. I see a lot of problems in that category.
I'm going to make my parents listen to this now and go back in time and like apologize for all the time they give out to us for still being in bed.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Here's a cool fact.
A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A bit of a random question for you, but we always hear about not looking at screens, not having TVs and stuff on for not helping sleep. Why then is it so easy for people to fall asleep in front of the TV?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. We have sleep is two processes. So I'll just give you a picture before I answer it. We have a circadian rhythm, which is our sort of natural clock. Every cell in our body has a clock in it. And it measures, it determines our sleep wake time. It determines when we eat, determines so much of our biological processes. And we also have another process where we build up sleep pressure. Caffeine is the thing that blocks it. Too much caffeine, no sleep pressure. But in the evening, we're tired, there's something hypnotic about the TV, and we often have a dip in that circadian rhythm. So we have an energetic dip. We have this natural drop. And so we will drop off in front of the TV. But it's the timing, you see. So the timing of that light exposure is not as bad as if you get that light exposure between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. That's when it's seriously disruptive. But in the evening, you get this sort of energetic drop and you just dip. And then come back out and you may have a little burst of energy and wake up, which is normal. And then you get ready and things start to drop again to go to bed. And this rhythm is important because it goes up and down all the time.
So let's talk through some of the non-anxiety inducing practical things that people can do, maybe a little thing that maybe weren't aware of to begin with. Like you say, from 11 p.m., then you want to not be near the screen. But if someone is already in a position where they're struggling to go asleep at night, or they struggle to stay asleep, or they're lying in the bed and they're worrying about something, where can we start to give them some feeling of being able to let go? Because you said that at the beginning, it's really the ultimate let go.
Yeah. I like to work on sleep from the moment we wake up in the morning, so that actually we're not doing all the work in the evening. If we're trying to then go, the last hour before bed, now I'm getting ready for sleep.
And then there's pressure and you feel anxious about it. And yeah.
Yeah. Take the pressure out of it. I have sort of three golden rules. One is a fixed wake-up time. That's like drawing a line in the sand and telling your body, this is when I wake up, and don't deviate too much away from it, which a lot of people really wince when I say, okay, what time do you need to be up during the week? 7 o'clock. Okay, you're going to need to do it 7 days a week, if possible. Not asking for perfection, but we don't want to be oversleeping, because if we get to the weekend, so the week we get up at 7, and then at the weekend we get up at 10, Saturday 10 on Sunday. That creates what's called social jet lag. And on Monday, it's like, oh, now I've got to go back two time zones or whatever. And that creates a state of anticipatory anxiety in the night before, because you know that Monday feels awful. So really, really focusing on that relatively fixed wake-up time. The body and the clocks in every cell adore consistently, and they will repay you in spades if you get that consistent timing in.
We have a little boy, obviously, and we're up out of the bed at 7:30 every morning, 7 days a week. So I'm glad to know that there's some benefit.
It really is. It's one of the sort of primary ways to focus on getting it sorted is that. Then we're Northern Hemisphere in the UK. So getting in the winter, of course, it's dark. So making sure we get lots of light first thing in the morning is part of also what sets that clock. So filling the place with light, people who really do struggle it's really useful to use daylight lights. If you can get outside, I mean, it's getting lighter now, it's easier to get more daylight first thing in the morning, but getting lots of light really helps tell the brain, tell the cells, it's time to wake up. And what it's also doing, that consistent timing and that light, is triggering an internal biological process 12 to 14 hours later in the evening, that's when the body's going to start producing melatonin, which is the sleepiness hormone. So this rhythm really matters. The other piece I ask people to do is get a decent protein-based breakfast and get moving. Now, it's not necessarily about getting out and going for a run or going for a walk. It may be just be as I've got music on in the kitchen and I'm dancing and I'm moving around whatever I'm doing. But it's about light, consistent timing, light movement, and a good protein-based breakfast, so that you start to, from the get-go, you're not flooding the system with a sugar-based breakfast, a cereal-based breakfast, where you get the blood sugar spikes. You're looking to settle the system first thing in the morning. That's sort of the big one. The second piece is the piece about working out, well, how much sleep do I need? And you can do that through keeping a sleep diary and tracking it overall. If you're away on holiday, you can start to notice and track your timing and what works naturally.
But not to the extent that you're using a device?
No, it's much more important that you're almost just using it through what does it feel like, rather than getting really targeted spreadsheets. But if you can work out, so you think, right, okay, I need about 7 hours sleep to function at well or at my best or whatever that might be. So, okay, I've got to get up at seven. So I'm going to go to bed at 11:30, 12 o'clock. And you get quite fixed about that. But there are always going to be exceptions to the rule. There's always going to be the late night out or whatever's going on, or that you're going traveling and something's going to shift. But trying to keep that as good as possible, and good enough really matters. Perfection, I get really freaked out when someone comes in and shows me a perfect set of data. I'm like, no, that's not what I want to see. I want to see good enough.
Yeah, because then any deviation from that is going to send them into orbit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so then we just think consistency. Let's get consistent about timing. Let's get some consistent meal times in. Let's get a steady diet in with not too much sugar. Really keeping an eye on the caffeine. Some people, and they are mutants genuinely because they've got a mutant gene, some people can drink caffeine till the cows come home. But a lot of us can't. A lot of us are really quite sensitive to it. And as I said earlier, caffeine is the thing that blocks sleep pressure, and it hangs around in the body for a long time. So I'm not saying never have caffeine. If you really like really nice coffee in the morning, sit there, have a really nice coffee, really enjoy that coffee, but don't keep having it all the way through the day. So really make a thing of the one that you really enjoy, and then it becomes really special rather than just something you're topping up on, because caffeine is a really significant issue. And that's in coffee, that's in tea, that's in energy drinks. And that the use of energy drinks in the young, in teenagers, and lots of people, especially who are doing driving jobs, the use of energy drinks is really problematic in the sleep world, because you've often got the double kick of too much caffeine and too much sugar, which really, really is detrimental. And then is it that's causing it, you may not be anxious at all. You may just be wired from sugar and caffeine.
You have to really take a holistic view of everything and get a clear idea of the different lifestyle factors, the nutritional factors. It's the same with looking at anxiety in general.
Yeah, very much. It really is, because your body's doing an amazing job. It perceives that you want it to be awake for a reason. So it's trying to help you. So help it to go, okay, well, actually, you don't need to be awake. And by looking at all these different factors, I mean, another really good one is looking at the timing of exercise. If you do a really intense HIIT class at night, and that's the only time you've got time to do it, you really need to think about, okay, I'm never going to say don't do it because I want you to exercise, especially if that's the only time you can do it. But you might need to think about, I need to take time to wind down, to cool down, because our body temperature has to drop for us to be able to fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And from an intense class, within sort of 3 hours of bed, you might still be quite hot. So you might need a cool shower. You might need time to decompress, and you might need time to have something to eat, something protein based to restore it. So it's thinking about the timing and intensity of what you're doing, just to meet that need. What goes up must come down.
The other night, my little boy started crying in the middle of the night. And obviously, for any parent, you're like, oh my God, like heart attack in the bed. Like, oh, do I have to go down? Does he need me? Do I have to go into him? Will he calm back down? And then he did fall back asleep, but I was completely wired then. And then I'm lying in the bed and it's my husband has already fallen back asleep because he's much better than I am. And I'm thinking, okay, your body thinks it needs to be alert because the baby, but the baby's gone back asleep. The cognitive piece around that, the way we speak to ourselves in those moments, I find it's like you're trying to be a psychotherapist to yourself at your most tired, vulnerable wee hours of the morning. That's somewhere I think could really help people, is when you find yourself in that spot, something to say or reassure yourself with, or things to remember to help your body trust that you can let go again.
Absolutely. Because of course, the moment we start trying to analyze, trying to solve, the brain is going into doing mode. So it's waking up and going, oh, okay, you want me to do some work here. So it's really, and it's really difficult because it's a time of night. We're not rational beings. The emotional brain's in control, and that's not rational. That speaks a whole other language all of its own. Because it, trying to tell yourself, I must not think about this in itself at that time of night is just not helpful. Think of it in this way. Sleep is a series of 4 or 5 sleep cycles. And at the beginning of each cycle, there is what we call a sleep window, where the sleepy hormone, adenosine, is at its highest. Over the night, it does reduce. So the last cycle, it's harder if you've woken up. But think, okay, I'm awake now. There's no point trying to fight with this. If you're really lying there and you're really anxious, make sure you plan during the day. I know that this happens to me. I'm going to get out of bed. I'm going to maybe go and keep the lights low, go and get a warm drink, just curl up and read a book. Or there was a huge trend during lockdown. People were building Lego models, whatever it might be that helps you to, it's not about avoiding it. It's about decompressing. If I can go and relax, remove myself from the place that's making me anxious, I know that there's going to be another sleep window that comes along. And if I let it just go, it will come and I will be able to have another go at getting sleepy again. But if you lie there, and often people say, I lie there and I'm really still and I try really hard and I close my eyes and I'm really, really trying. It's not going to happen.
Mm.
For some people, yes, it does. But if it's really getting building, get out of there. Go and do something that's a little bit more pleasurable, a bit more self-soothing. You're a mum. Think about how you are with your little boy. You go in and very quietly keep the lights down. Everything's very calm, gentle reassurance, whatever it might be. He might need a drink. You check his nappy, that sort of thing. In many ways, you're doing the same for yourself. It's exactly the same process. But of course, we're grown ups and we don't need our nappies changed, maybe or maybe not. But it's that whole piece of, can I self-soothe myself to go back to sleep? If I don't worry, if I don't get myself het up, then it's more likely to come. But of course, if I am worrying, then it's important I need to get out of here and know that there is a series of cycles and I'll get another opportunity to go to sleep. Then people say to me, oh, but then I'm starting to count and I'm thinking I've only got so many hours for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a disaster. Please try not to do that, because of course that's, again, it's that loop that's going into the brain and going uh-oh. Rest is really valid, and so the next day it's like, okay, I'm not on the game. I'm just going to give myself permission to be a little bit under par, and where I can take a rest, I will sit and put my feet up and maybe listen to a podcast for 20 minutes or go for a walk or whatever it is that helps me to decompress. It's building up a series of skills and toolbox, if you like, so you know what to do.
My mother always said to me when I was not able to sleep, if I was scared or something, and she would say, look, let your body rest, because that's the next best thing. And if you can rest and relax, at least you're getting that. So for me, it helps to, instead of thinking, oh my God, you need to be asleep when conscious, I'm like, oh, you're resting, like enjoy this rest, enjoy not having to get up and go anywhere or do anything right now. I don't know if that's just like a cognitive trick or if there's any truth to it, but it helps me.
It's a fundamental truth. It's brilliant. And your mum's awesome. Can she come and work with me? It's so true. It's so, so true. Because remember what I said about when someone is in a sleep study and they feel like they're awake, but actually technically they're asleep. Rest is so valid for the brain and the body. To, it may be that you're drifting in and out of very light sleep, but it really, really matters. It really, really matters just to lay there and think, yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine. This is absolutely fine. I like my bed. I can just chill and there's nothing else I need to do right now. Rest is valid, and it's almost the most important thing we need to focus on, rest and relaxation, because it's so important.
It's not about just focusing on that 1 hour before bed. It's building in little moments of relaxation and decompression throughout the day, and not just climbing the stairs thinking, oh Jesus, what's the night got in store for me?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that whole piece is something that we really work to break down. I mean, one of the things, if you think about it, all through the day, we all go really fast. We're taking on constant information everywhere we go. There's literally from the moment we get up, we've got these devices that pour information into our brains. It's just everywhere. Just the brain is pulling all this info. If there's no time for it to pause during the day, it will get to bed and it will go, right, you've given me some space now. And the thoughts will start to really run because it's desperately trying to sort all this stuff out. Whereas if we can take regular breaks to daydream for 5 minutes, to just stare out of the window every hour. I mean, when people are working sort of back-to-back meetings, I really ask them, please stop every hour, 5 minutes, get up from your desk, stretch, go walk around the room, get a glass of water, stare out the window, count 10 things that are red. It's so important to give the brain that space to just go, ah, it's got to clear. The brain is a very, very energetic organ. It's got to clear that metabolic waste. It's got to have time to just pause and shuffle everything around again. But we don't give it the space. So of course, at night, it's like, I'm going to do it now. And it's just like, everything goes kicks off, you hit the head of the pillow and 50,000 things come up in the brain, and it's like the brain is telling you, you didn't give me the chance to do it, so you need to pause, keep pausing.
It's so interesting, like I'd never put that framework on it, but I'm always saying to people who are anxious, like maybe they've taken a break for Christmas or they've gone on holidays and then they feel really anxious about something, and it's like, why am I anxious now when I'm relaxing? And like, well, you didn't have a chance to process. You were go, go, go.
And also we're all a bit addicted to it. I mean, the experience might not be nice, but there is something enticing. We get that dopamine hit, that sort of go, 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 constant on. But it also often does something for our ego. It's like, I feel valued, I feel worthy. And if I'm doing, if I'm being, and all these things, it's got very deep roots. And this is where we get into work as a psychotherapist. Well, what is it that's driving you to be on all the time? What is the need to perform, to be, to do? It's a really complex piece, but actually they have shown very, very clearly in clinical studies that downtime massively improves our productivity. We are way, way more effective if we take regular breaks. This idea of pushing through is just crazy when you think about it technically, how the brain and body works. It's a bit baffling, really. You think, well, that's not actually how our biology works. So why have we got a society that does this? I don't know.
I think we're only starting to kind of wake up to that now, no pun intended, that this always switched on thing, which it's doing nobody any favors in so many different areas of life. Like it's the one roadblock. And people feel like there's some sort of weakness or giving up in allowing themselves to just be or sit idly for a minute, or even standing in a queue and not just reaching for your phone, but just to be able to just take in your surroundings. Like it's just, it feels alien to so many of us. And there's a social element to it as well. We don't want to be seen to be like twiddling our thumbs, like you say.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I want to give you the chance to tell people about your book around sleep. Now, it's not going to make people more anxious about sleep.
Well, I hope not. So, The idea behind the book was to take over 100 questions that I'm regularly asked and to come back with an evidence-based response to how things work. Some of them are very sleep-based, but it's a huge collection of things like, well, where do I put my bed? Does that affect my sleep? Through to sleep timing. It's a real Q&A to try and clarify a lot of how I would work in the clinic. This would be the response I would give, to be able to break down some of the myths that are out there. Like, for example, the 8-hour thing. No, not everybody does need 8 hours sleep. It's 7 to 9 hours, and you might not even need either one of those. So it's all about breaking each of those things down into really simple ways to understand it. And because I was lucky enough, and it's an absolute gift, I'll tell you, as an ex-art director, to work with the publishers Dorling and Kindersley, it's a very visual book. So it's very pictorial to try and bring it to life in a way that's very, very clear as to, and not scary, this is how XYZ works.
Heather, thank you so much for sharing so much of your expertise. I often think that when I have conversations about sleep, I'll come away feeling overwhelmed that I'm not doing it right, or there's so many other things I need to consider. But I really love your approach of just letting go of the perfectionism, letting go in general. That's a really, really, really helpful thing to remember going forward. If people want to follow you or get more information or buy the book, is there one kind of central place we can send them to?
Well, I have a website, heatherdarwellsmith.com, but my book is available on all major retailers, especially the big one that's online.
Well, I can't thank you enough, and I hope that you'll join me again sometime soon. I'm sure there's so many more topics we could discuss together.
Oh, I'm sure, but it's been lovely. Thank you so much.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.